Resources meeting is called to order at about 1 o'clock. With us today are Representative Olson, Representative Elkin, and Representative Seaton, Co-Chair Samuels, myself, Co-Chair Rammers.
I just have to ask one, was I supposed to comment on that?
Yes, you feel free. We're going to take up three bills today, or one resolution and two bills. We're going to begin with HCR3, which is the Renewable Energy Alaska Project, and then proceed to HB 75, and then start to take up the NEPDES bill on HB 153. Also joining us is Representative Crawford. And Jim Pound, do you want to come up and do HCR3 for us, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Jim Pound, staff to Representative Ramos. HCR3 recognizes the fact that the state of Alaska needs to move forward with its energy needs. Alternative energy, that other than oil and other resource-based, is now the wave of the future. Wind, hydrogen, geothermal, biomass, hydroelectric, and tidal energy are all areas that are being considered across the world right now. Alaska has an opportunity to be out in front in these areas of energy production. HCR3 simply recognizes these facts and urges the governor to work with those individuals and groups aimed at developing the future development of alternative energy. Some of the areas this will help the state in particular, is power cost equalization, as rural areas will be able to use alternative energy sources rather than the current system of running diesel generators with the fuel being delivered. We thank you for your time, and we consider your passage of HCR3. I'll answer any questions if I can.
Anybody have any questions? Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Would you explain a little more about the relationship with power cost equalization?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, some areas, for example, Bethel is right now in the process of considering looking at wind generation for their particular part of the state. And I believe Kotzebue already has some wind turbines in place as well, and it's saving us money on power cost equalization.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome. Any other questions? Excellent. Thank you, Jim. Do we have anybody in the room who wishes to testify on HCR3? Anybody online? Just Chris Rose. Chris, are you with us?
Okay, I think I was muted. Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. My name is Chris Rose. I'm with Renewable Energy Alaska Project, known as REAP. We're a statewide coalition of utility companies, both large and small, environmental groups, consumer groups, businesses, and natives that would like to see the increased production of renewable energy in the state. And we're working together to do that. We simply would like to urge the panel to move this onto the House floor and pass it. We really believe that we do have an opportunity, as Mr. Pound said, to be a leader in this field. And Alaska has some of the resources that other states and other nations would give a lot for in terms of wind, geothermal, and opportunities to produce biofuels. And so we really would like to see the legislature do things like this resolution that actually urges the governor to start working on that with us and other groups that are working to do the same thing.
Excellent. Any more testimony, Chris?
No, that's it. It's pretty straightforward. Like to see it passed and move forward.
All right. Representative Ledoux has joined us. Any questions for Mr. Rose? All right. Thank you for your testimony. I appreciate it. Nobody else online? Nobody else in the room? Public testimony is closed. Anybody like to move this bill? Or this resolution?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes?
One comment I made while in D.C. on Energy Council, they had a hydrogen-powered car, and it was a little over $1 million to buy it, but you put liquid hydrogen in, and the exhaust coming out the back was a water vapor, and it was very interesting.
Now, did you get an opportunity to drive that vehicle?
Yes, I did. I was very careful about the price tag. I thought more about my turn signals than I did about the hydrogen, actually, so.
Representative Seaton?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I'm pleased to see that on page 2 on line 7, we also talk about tidal power, and that's something that in my district we've been looking at, and we've got a great resource there that hasn't had much much real exploration, so I appreciate that.
Pleasure. Alaska has a grand opportunity to be a leader, not only in producing traditional fossil fuel mineral energy, but also in, because it's such a vast state, to pursue these other things. Yes, sir?
Yes. Are you ready for a motion?
Yes, I am.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move House Concurrent Resolution Number 3, Version G, with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Thank you. Any objection to HCR 3? Seeing none, HCR 3 passes. Now we'll move on to, thank you, Jim. We're going to move on to HB 75, but I don't see the bill sponsor.
At ease?
Yeah. You want to take a brief at ease, and let's see if we can... Okay, let's go back on record, please. We're going to take up House Bill 75. Heath, are you going to make this presentation for us, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Heath Hilliard. I'm staff to Representative Kelly. I do believe that Representative Kelly may be joining me shortly. I know that he would like to offer his comments, so he may be joining me shortly. With respect to HB 75, the current version you have in front of you has a title and language that says an act relating to promoting and preserving sport hunting in the state of Alaska. I have in your packet a committee substitute that I would like to refer to for the bulk of my presentation. That would be LS 0359G.
Please. Richard Samuels.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move that we adopt 24-LS0359-G of the CS for HB 75 for discussion purposes.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, ma'am.
I don't have the committee substitute.
I don't have it either. That's why I'm... okay, which one? I have LS0359-G. Is that the one?
Was it?
I have one.
He has one, but I don't have one.
Any objection? Representative Ledoux, have you had an opportunity to...
Thank you.
I also believe that, at least I...
Hold for me one second, please. Is there any objection to adopting... CS for HB 75-0359-G. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to make two points, there are only two essentially substantial changes between the first version, HB 75, and the CS, which is the version G. Essentially, two things have happened, and this was at the request of the individual who we began working on this bill for. We included trapping as a specified activity, and we also removed the reference to sport. We believe that was a problematic phrase and maybe gave the impression that we were trying to do something that we clearly weren't. We clearly are just trying to establish that hunting and trapping in this state are a primary activity and part of our cultural heritage, and that's essentially what we're trying to say in the language with respect to the duties of the commissioner and the duties of the Board of Game. That's under the current committee substitute. This bill was drafted or adopted essentially from a language that appeared in a 2004 Michigan bill, and as I did some research, and I believe that you'll find in your packet a couple of references, particularly to some other constitutional language, one in particular from Montana, which is relatively recent. In addition, Minnesota adopted very similar language in the 90s with respect to their constitution. We believe that this language is fundamentally consistent with Article 8, Section 4 of our state's constitution, which talks about sustained yield. So with that brief explanation, I would be happy to entertain any questions, and I think there might be some other testimony online.
Do I have questions for Mr. Hilliard, Representative Seaton?
Thank you. What do you see as the impact of this language on the commissioner and the determinations he'll have to make in the future? Because the commissioner shall. So if you could explain.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I believe that Sarah Gilbertson from the commissioner's office is here, and we have been speaking about this, and I think she could probably better address your question. I think she would be more astute to explain the organizational changes or anything that might incur as a result of this language. So,
could I follow up?
Yeah, I'd like to also recognize that Representative Kelly has joined us, bill sponsor. Go ahead, Representative Seaton.
I guess I would like to find out from the department too, but I guess what I'm trying to do is find out the sponsor's intent on what difference this language would make in the job that the commissioner or determinations the commissioner does.
Through the chair, to Representative Seaton, I noticed that Representative Kelly has joined you at the table, and I don't. Perhaps maybe, as the sponsor, he has some specific thoughts.
Excellent thought, Representative Kelly. Please.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. As to the specific additional workload or anything like that, I would anticipate nearly none. In talking to Ms. Gilbertson, her statement was that the bill with the rework that they had suggested. Will assist them and actually make life easier for them, because it makes it very clear what we are about. And in addition, Mr. Chairman, part of what we were thinking is that because of the organizations such as PETA, which are going to continue to hammer away, they now are even concerned about hooks in the mouths of our king salmon. And other fish. So our thought was that this bill would make it clear that this is about what we have been as a people, what we are now, and what we're likely to be in the future.
I will point out, Representative Kelly, that it's been proven that coho salmon do not have the range of feelings that king salmon enjoy. I'm sure you're well aware of that scientific finding.
Having hooked a few, Mr. Chairman, they certainly act like there's something that's got them upset.
Well, the president of Harvard was on record at a speech talking about the difference in feelings between kings and cohos. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sir. Any other questions for Mr. Hilliard or for Representative Kelly? Excellent. Thank you very much. Let's go online, please. We first have Dave Bachrach. Dave, are you with us?
Yes, I'm with you, and I'm now with the, I guess there's been a change or a suggested amendment in language, so I'm going to, my testimony is as a citizen, I guess, it still looks to me like even amending it, taking out the word sport, it still looks like you're giving preference to one user group over another.
Dave?
Yes?
May I interrupt you? An amendment has not been offered yet, so it wouldn't...
See, he's got the original.
He's got the original...
I've got the one online.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. It's with or without the you know, whether or not the word sport is in it or not, I would still think it gives preference to one user group over another for a common resource as defined by the state constitution. So that would be one objection that I would have to this bill. And the other would be I'd like to know what the impact, or I would like some clarification on what the impact would be on wildlife viewing and tourism. Whether this, you know, this gets promoted above those, or it it takes priority over those. That's all my comments. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. is Bachrach? Am I
Bachrach? That's correct. Yes.
Any questions for Mr. Bachrach? Mr. Bachrach, we thank you. Then thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
Next, we have Jennifer Uhas from Alaska Outdoor Council. Jennifer, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. Go ahead, please.
My name is Jennifer Uhas. I am the Executive Director for the Alaska Outdoor Council, and we would like to thank both the sponsor for introducing this legislation and the committee for hearing it today. The Alaska Outdoor Council is in support of the legislation before you, as well as the work draft of the CS. We did receive a copy of that today, and we're in full support of the changes being made to eliminate the word sport. We believe that helps to dispel the misnomer of sport hunting, and we are in support of the introduction of the trapping language. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is tasked with managing our fish and wildlife resources, and it should no longer be legally gagged from promoting the merits of each of those tools that it uses to meet this obligation. The public, as well as our decision makers, have the right to hear from our biologists and managers when making decisions that will affect their ability to manage. In response to the previous testimony from Mr. Bachrach, in support of viewing uses, these uses are subject to preference among users, and that is part of what the legislature's job is, and we urge you to pass this legislation and the CS today. I have a few other people in the room that are signed up to testify on this phone line if you'd like to get to them as well today.
Yes, we would. Are there any questions for Ms. Uhas? Jennifer, thank you very much, and we're going to go next to Tom Scarborough, and then if there are other people, we do not have them listed in Fairbanks. I have them on.
Tom Scarborough went over to the LIO. I have with me Mr. Bud Burris, Mr. Lynn Levengood, and Mr. Wayne Heimer.
This is Tom. I'm here.
Hi, Tom. Nice to hear from you. Please go ahead, and then Jen, we'll get back to the people that are with you in a moment.
Tom Scarborough, I live at 1676 Taroka Drive in Fairbanks, and I'm here to make real briefly state for the organization, Alaska Wildlife Conservation Association, that we support this bill, and we'll work with the committee to see that it goes forward.
Excellent. Any other comments, Tom?
No, that's all. I just need to know that you need to know that we have our support.
Okay, we appreciate that very much. Any questions for Mr. Scarborough? Thank you very much, Tom. I'm sorry.
Can we hear from her next?
From
Sarah?
Yes, we can. Jen, we're gonna have you hold off for a moment. We're gonna hear from Sarah Gilbertson from Fish and Game.
For the record, my name is Sarah Gilbertson. I'm the legislative liaison for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Don't really have prepared comments and should first apologize for Acting Commissioner Wayne Regalin, who's in Washington, D.C., and would very much like to be here. But I guess from our standpoint, the changes that Representative Kelly is proposing to the commissioner's functions aren't 100% necessary, but they provide a tool that we think would be quite useful. We were happy to see the reference to the word sport hunting removed, because sport hunting is found nowhere in Alaska statute. That would have been the only reference. So taking out the word sport was actually very good. I think from our perspective, we'd actually like to see the language in this bill broadened to include fisheries. Because when we stand back and we look at it from a department standpoint, putting that the commissioner should preserve and promote hunting is a great thing. We all agree that hunting is an important part of Alaska's history, our heritage, and the way that we continue life today. However, when we step back from the commissioner's office and look at the department as a whole, who is charged with not only managing but preserving and promoting both our hunting and fishing resources, we feel that if you put only that the commissioner should promote and preserve hunting, that sort of lends some sort of more importance to hunting over fishing. And so We feel that, as Representative Kelly alluded to earlier, this could be a really important tool for the commissioner who could weigh in, say, on ballot initiatives and currently doesn't do so. So if we broaden that language to say, in conjunction with the Board of Fisheries and Game, promote hunting, trapping, and fishing, and preserve the heritage of hunting, trapping, and fishing in the state, we think that that would be good from a department standpoint because it covers everything that the Alaska Department of Fish and Game both manages, preserves, and promotes. And it would also be good because it's not giving any one resource use priority over another. So it'd be a really good tool to have in our toolbox. I also believe Kevin Saxby from the Department of Law is on the phone, and I think he has some thoughts on this as well. So.
Excellent. Are there any questions for the committee or of the committee for Ms. Gilbertson? Representative Elkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wonder why you recommend that we also add the Board of Fish.
Because the Board of Fish is charged with allocation of fisheries, and this currently says work in conjunction with the Board of Game. So I just figured if we were going to add fisheries to this for the commissioner, that we should also add it for the Board of Fish as well.
Do you have a follow-up, Mr. Chairman? Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Sarah, I'm trying to figure out how this would influence or direct the commissioner to influence decisions. As you know, we have the McNeil Bear Sanctuary, I guess it is.
Refuge across, and Sanctuary, yes.
Right, across Cook Inlet, and there's a proposal to harvest bears in that viewing sanctuary now. If this was passed as is and says the commissioner shall do this, does this mean that the commissioner's job is going to be take the bear sanctuary and promote hunting and trapping of bears in that sanctuary and no longer and take away the discretion for having that as a bear viewing industry, which is, you know, very lucrative industry in my district.
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I probably should allow Kevin Saxby from the Department of Law to take a crack at that. But my guess would be, you know, as I mentioned before, the commissioner and the department, we feel that we already do this. We feel that we do this not only for hunting, trapping, but also for fishing. And so this is really a policy call for you guys to put it in the functions of the commissioner. You know, we feel that both the commissioner and the division already does this of wildlife conservation, but you know, it's a policy call from your end to actually define it and put it in the commissioner's functions. But relative to McNeil, those decisions are currently made by the Board of Game, and as you know, they just considered a proposal on that subject. So I don't know how, even if this were passed, that the commissioner could step in to change what's going on there. That's under the purview of the Board of Game.
Follow up?
I guess my follow up is that right now, as you're saying, that the commissioner has the purview and that the Board of Game and the commissioner go forward, but what this is changing is on line 4, it says the commissioner shall, and then giving him a new duty. And as I read it, in every instance, he shall, in conjunction with the Board of Game, promote hunting, trapping. And I'm wondering whether this gives the absolute direction that, you know, the commissioner must follow this path. And even though we have a area that is obviously set aside for viewing and for interaction other than through hunting and trapping with bears, whether this basically eliminates that option from the commissioner.
Right. Mr. Chairman, can we see if Kevin Saxby's online?
Yes, we can. Kevin, are you with us?
Yes, this is Kevin Saxby, Mr. Chairman.
Would you comment on this for us, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I signed on to testify in support of the committee substitute and then in support of the suggestion that Ms. Gilbertson has made, but I'll, if you want me to answer the questions that have just been posed, I'll be happy to do that. Is that what you want from me?
Yes, sir. That would be very helpful. Did you understand Representative Seaton's question?
I did. Okay. The bill would only add to the duties of the commissioner. It doesn't remove any of the existing duties of the commissioner or the department, and it doesn't purport to trump any of the existing duties. The department currently has specific duties, statutory duties, as to, for example, the McNeil Sanctuary and Refuge, and to maintain those, to maintain the habitat, to maintain the bear populations, et cetera. And the commissioner also currently has duties in the very statute that you're amending to manage, protect, maintain, improve, and extend the fish, game, and aquatic plant resources of the state in the interest of the economy and general well-being of the state. So this just adds a duty to preserve and promote hunting and trapping now. It doesn't trump any of those other things.
Do you have a follow-up, yeah. Representative Seaton?
I did. So I just want to get this straight then. If you were advising the commissioner of the Board of Game, and he has a specific duty to that he shall do this new number three, promote hunting and trapping, that if a request comes to the board to open hunting within the McNeil currently sanctuary, that the commissioner under the shall duty to promote would be fully able to say that he disagrees with promoting hunting in that area and recommends that the board keep it closed. Is that what you're saying?
As to McNeil, he will still be free to do that, Mr. Chairman, yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Ledoux?
Okay, I'm a little bit confused about things. I understand you're saying that what this bill does, that the commission already does without the bill. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux. Preserving and promoting hunting and fishing and trapping is something that the department believes is within its mission. We aim to do that all the time. So what Representative Kelly is doing is proposing that we add that to the functions of the commissioner. And so I think as Kevin Saxby was just alluding to, the commissioner's then going to have to think, you know, in his actions and in his daily activities, is going to have this on his mind. Is he preserving and promoting hunting and fishing? But I think, as Kevin Saxby was just saying, and with respect to Paul Seaton's question, is that the commissioner, this doesn't mean that, you know, McNeil bear viewing, for instance, in the refuge will go away. So, really, it gives us another tool in the toolbox, because I think the department is at times cautious about weighing in on ballot initiatives, for example. And so with this in mind, it makes it a little bit easier for the commissioner to take that next step and weigh in.
So that's, can I follow up?
Yes, please, Robert.
So that's how you would see it, would be giving the commissioner another tool in the toolbox to weigh in on, for example, a ballot initiative.
That's through the chair, Representative Ledoux. That's my take on it. Kevin, if you have anything to include or to add to that.
Kevin, do you have anything for us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. In the litigation that I'm currently defending, that is a challenge to all the state's predator control programs, the opponents of predator control have made a huge issue and attempted to really exploit the idea that this is being done for, quote, sport hunting purposes, unquote. And so it's really been helpful to remove the term sport there. That creates complications under the Airborne Hunting Act, for example. It creates a number of complications if the legislature were to ever categorize Alaskan hunters as sport hunters. We, when a, every statement that we have in the statutes that, that puts a duty on the commissioner or the department to promote consumptive uses ends up being helpful when we have challenges to those consumptive uses. And likewise, it would be helpful in the future to have a statement like that about fishing, anticipating that at some point in the future we're going to be facing a challenge to consumptive use of some or all fish, probably.
Representative Ledoux?
Is there a concern that even if the governor's office, for example, wants to issue a statement with respect to one of these outside ballot initiatives, that that would be inappropriate to do now without language such as in this amendment?
Mr. Saxby?
Mr. Chairman, we're currently prohibited from expending state funds for the purpose of influencing an election, not under this law, but under the state's election laws. And that's been a barrier hitherto. With language like this, where we have a mandatory duty to promote consumptive uses, we will at least be able to make, I think the department will be able to make some kinds of statements that in, that effectively do that.
Mr. Representative Ledoux?
Well, I guess I'm just wondering if that is the problem, being forbidden to do so by the state's election law, then without saying that this isn't a good idea, maybe we ought to be looking into the state's election law, because if that's what we want to be able to do, or we want the commissioner to be able to do.
Representative Kelly?
Mr. Chairman, just a comment on that issue. The primary reason for bringing this bill forward is that there's a laundry list of attacks being made, and they are primarily PETA is the type of organization that's lining them up and delivering them, and we find ourselves, and some other states are in the same, Michigan, Montana, Minnesota, found themselves in the same situation where the addition of this tool permits one to stand up and say, hunting, fishing, trapping are part of who we have been and are and intend to be. And it makes that statement very clear, so that when the attacks are coming in, whether it's the hook in the mouth of the fish or the hunting or trapping in various in various forms that would come forward, this merely says that the people of Alaska say that this is part of our heritage and it is something that is important to us. It doesn't go into the economics, but one could of hunting and fishing. So it is something, just a tool that kind of teaches through our statute that this is who we are as a people, and that's really where this comes from. And I apologize for the committee substitute being late. A combination of things, Ms. Gilbertson's boss being out and the CS coming through at a time when he didn't get a chance to look at it. I apologize for that. It just the way it kind of worked out today. But we thought we'd try to go ahead with your hearing, Mr. Chairman, as much as we could.
We're always delighted to work with you, Representative Kelly. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Ledoux, any follow-up? Are you satisfied? Thank you very much, Sarah. We're going to go back to Lynn Levengood. Did you have something, Representative Seed?
Yes, I had one more thing for the department while they're here. And I hope it's okay at this point in time. What I would like to do is I'd like the committee to get a Fish and Game legal AG opinion that the this duty that we're putting on that the commissioner shall promote hunting will not put a burden on the commissioner to recommend hunting in an area such as McNeil Sanctuary.
Kevin, can we get an opinion from you on Representative Seaton's point?
Mr. Chairman, I'll forward that request to my bosses and put it in motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like, you know, we're getting that here, but I would really like to get that to follow the bill so we got legislative history that determines where we're coming down on this, because it's very important to my district. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for the Department of Fish and Game? All right. Lynn Levengood, are you with us? Lynn? I'm unclear. Jen Uhas, do we still have you here? Did we lose her? Okay. Any other comments in the room? There's no other, nobody else on the online, is that right? Any other testimony here in the room? All right, we're going to close public testimony and on to entertain a motion, please.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like, please, first of all, Representative Kelly's opinion on the fishing amendment that Fish and Game brought up. We've got distributed here.
Mr. Chairman, I believe it's a good suggestion, and it will broaden the tool, and, you know, perhaps we might not have thought so much about this if we went back a couple of years, but with the very recent headlines in the past year about, you know, hook-catching fish, then it's part of the deal, so I think it helps.
Would go ahead,
Mr. Chairman. With that, I'd move Amendment Number 1, which I think just got handed out, starting with deletes lines 11, 12, and insert in conjunction with the Board of Fish and the Board of Game.
Does everybody have Amendment Number 1 in front of them? Any objection to Amendment Number 1? Seeing none, Amendment 1 is adopted. Co-Chair Samuels.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd also propose an Amendment 2 as a title change amendment and insert fishing in the title wherever appropriate and offer it conceptually to let the drafters put fishing in.
Any objection to Amendment Number 2? Seeing none, Amendment Number 2, a change to the title is adopted. Any further discussion? Any objection? Go ahead. I'm sorry, Representative Seaton.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm a little bit concerned about the title. It's really broad. I think what we're talking about here is an act relating to the duties of the Commissioner of Fish and Game in promoting hunting and fishing in the state, and I'd like to offer that as a conceptual amendment to tighten it a little bit.
Sorry, you need to clarify for me, Representative Seaton. How do you...
On line, page 1, line 1, I'd like to add an act relating to, and then it would be the duties of the Commissioner of Fish and Game to in promoting and preserving hunting, trapping, and I believe we have fishing, and fishing in the state.
Would that be would that be an amendment to the amendment? Would that be Amendment Number 2, which is to change the title to add fishing?
I think that would just be amendment.
We passed that, so it's
that would be Amendment 3.
Amendment 3? Any objection to Amendment Number 3? Representative Kelly?
Mr. Chairman, just a comment, not an objection, but this language states in conjunction with the Board of Game, so it kind of, are we by not, by becoming so specific relative to the commissioner, causing a difficulty if we don't become just as specific with the Board of Game? And just a suggestion, Mr. Chairman, perhaps the legal folks online could tell us whether, could give us their opinion relative to the breadth of the title. And
let me go to Representative Seaton first, and then Kevin, we may ask you a follow-up question. Representative Seaton?
Sure, and I am proposing this as a conceptual amendment, so okay. Allegedly, we could do whatever, but we are modifying section 1605.020, which is functions of the commissioner, and so that why we had it that way, but I'm sure willing to listen to whatever legal says.
Kevin, are you still with us? Are you with us, Kevin?
Yes.
The conceptual amendment that's offered by Representative Seaton, does it accommodate the intent of this bill?
Well, I need to make sure I understand the intent. It sounded to me so far like the intent is to provide a duty, a statutory duty, to the commissioner to preserve and promote hunting and fishing and trapping. If so, then your amendment does accommodate that. If you're also trying to create a new duty for the Board of Game, then you'd need to address another section of the Fish and Game Code.
Representative Seaton?
Yes. What we have in here is we're only modifying Section 1605.020, functions of the commissioner. As I see it, anyway, that's the section that we are, that we have, the only section that still really deals with, we've got, are you talking about 255 on the back page, section 2? Is that?
251 now.
251 and 255.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd just address Representative Seaton's question briefly. Yeah, if you know, if you notice the amendment, the first series of amendments that you adopted, we amend 251 and 255 to make the conforming amendments to make that language consistent both within the commissioner's functions, the Board of Fish, and the Board of Game as well. So if you're going to make the title change amendment, you would have to make reference to all three of the respective duties.
Representative Seaton?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, I would agree that makes sense within the title to have all three listed, but... I would like to get the title a little more specific than just as broad as it is.
Understood.
Was that Kelly? Trust there.
Did you have a comment?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. So the amendment, amendment number three that's before us, the conceptual amendment, is an act relating to the duties of the Commissioner of Fish and Game to work with the Board of Fish and the Board of Game in promoting and preserving fishing, hunting, and trapping. Is that?
Actually, I think it would probably read something like an act relating to the duties of the Commissioner, the Board of Fisheries, and the Board of Game to promote and preserve hunting and trapping in the state.
And fishing.
And fishing, yes.
Is everybody clear on conceptual amendment number three? Is there an objection to conceptual amendment number three? Seeing none, amendment number three passes. All right. Is there objection to CS for House Bill number 75 with amendments?
Chairman,
moved it. Yeah.
Yep. I move CS. Or HB 75 as amended with attached zero fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Any objection? Representative Seaton?
Yes. Just for discussion, that we'll get the legal opinion and that'll follow the bill, the legal opinion about how this will influence something like McNeil Canyon, that will follow the bill. Yeah. Is that your understanding as well?
That is my understanding. Do you want to... propose anything to you? You're satisfied with that?
I'm satisfied. I just wanted to clarify that was everybody's understanding, and with that, I remove my objection.
Okay. Any other objections? Okay. Seeing none, then HB 75-LSO359-G passes out of resources. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
It's our pleasure.
Sleep easier now. I'm going to stick a visit. Are we at ease for a few minutes? Or are we?
Yeah, we'll go off the record. We'll take a brief at ease. Number 153, the NPDES bill. And who do we have in the room that is going to provide testimony? Good afternoon, sir. How are you today?
Good.
Are you Mr. Frederickson?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Kurt Frederickson. I'm the acting commissioner of the Department of Environmental Conservation. And with me is Dan Easton, the director of our water division. Let me begin by saying I'm pleased to testify today in support of House Bill 153 for state assumption of the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, commonly referred to as the NPDES permit program. My testimony will focus on why Governor Murkowski and I believe passage of HB 153 will strengthen the ability of Alaskans to protect the state's water resources and build a strong economy. As I mentioned, with me today is Dan Easton, Director of Division of Water, and he'll provide you with details of how this bill was developed. Since the creation of DEC in 1971, our duties have been clearly spelled out by the legislature to adopt and enforce regulations which set standards for the control of water, land, and air pollution. DEC fulfills these state obligations consistent with national pollution control programs authorized under the Clean Air Act and Clean Water Act. These state and federal environmental laws are designed to accomplish uniform environmental quality goals nationwide using pollution controls tailored to each state's unique circumstances. DEC currently exercises all the authorities granted by the Alaska Legislature as well as the United States Congress to protect Alaska's air quality and drinking water. The same is not true for protecting the quality of Alaska's surface water. The Federal Environmental Protection Agency is the water authority in Alaska. Alaska, like four other states, has allowed wastewater permitting authority to remain with the federal government. EPA makes the wastewater permitting rules in Alaska. EPA decides what's important and what's not. EPA decides the permit review timeframes. EPA decides what goes into the permits and who gets inspected. EPA decides how Alaska's water quality standards will be applied to specific discharges. EPA sets Alaska's water quality priorities. As you know, Governor Murkowski is committed to permit streamlining that eliminates duplicative, unnecessary procedures which invite litigation and add time and cost without necessarily adding additional environmental protection. Governor Murkowski is committed to permit streamlining that aligns our regulatory requirements with real Alaska conditions and focuses on the real risk to Alaska's water quality. DEC has made significant progress in streamlining its permit programs, but when it comes to wastewater permitting, we cannot fix what we don't control. Alaska has never pursued the opportunity provided by the Federal Clean Water Act to shape the NPDES Water Pollution Control Permit Program to fit Alaska's unique circumstances. HB 153 would allow DEC to develop a comprehensive water quality protection program where all program components, from legislative budgeting and oversight to field work and enforcement, are conducted here in the state, where Alaskans can shape solutions to fit Alaska's challenges. Alaskans are capable of protecting our water resources. A state permit program will be based on Alaska priorities, not national priorities that are one size fits all. DEC's permit priorities, level of effort, and performance measures would be subject to annual review and approval by Alaskans through their elected officials in the state legislature. A state-run program will place permit decision makers closer to the Alaskan public and regulated permit holders. No longer will permits be written and enforced by federal staff unfamiliar with Alaska's unique environment. The state-run permit program won't be free. When EPA issues permits in Alaska, the costs are borne by the U.S. taxpayer. A state permit program will shift authority and responsibility to the state, but it will also shift some of the costs to permit holders in the state. Federal programs do not easily adapt to Alaska conditions. National goals do not always address our greatest needs. You, Alaska's elected representatives, have made clear our commitment to environmental protection and our responsibility to develop our resources for the well-being of all Alaskans. If we are to realize the promise of resource development, we must accept responsibility for managing our water resources. That means assuming primacy for the NPDES permit program. With primacy, there will be no rollback of environmental protection. Anyone who supports primacy on that basis will be disappointed. NPDES primacy means a faster, more effective program for protecting our water resources. Alaskan industries and communities working with Alaskan permitters on permits that reflect our priorities and unique conditions, permits that make sense for Alaska. Less emphasis on cumbersome process and more emphasis on results. Less emphasis on one-size-fits-all permits and more emphasis on specific risks to Alaska's environment. Permitting accountability, accountability to Alaska's elected officials and the public. We believe it's time for Alaskans to take responsibility for protecting Alaska's environment, and to do otherwise means continuing the status quo which is unacceptable. I'd like to ask Dan, unless there's any questions at this point, to give an overview of the details of how we got here. This has been a multi-year effort, and then we might entertain any questions from the committee.
Sure. Thank you very much, Mr. Fredrickson. Go ahead, Mr. Easton.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Dan Easton, Director of Water for DEC. The House Bill 153 is indeed a result of years of effort, starting with Senate Bill 326. Senate Bill 326, enacted in 2002 and effective January 1, 2003, directed our agency to evaluate the potential benefits and consequences of the state assuming primacy for the NPDES program. The department released, it called for a report. The department released this report in January 2004. This is available from our website if anyone's interested. This report recommended that the state seek primacy and determined that the state would need a total of 43 positions and a budget of $4.8 million to run the program based on workload models in comparison with other states. I'll come back to those figures in a second. Last year, the legislature passed House Bill 546 that directed the state to apply for partial NPDES primacy, specifically for the timber sector. The fiscal note with that bill provided a full-time position and a combination of state and one-time federal grant funds for the effort. In an unexpected twist, EPA notified DEC last October that partial primacy just for the timber sector would be, quote-unquote, problematic. Reconciling ourselves to second best, we executed something called a work share agreement. That agreement makes DEC the lead in the substantial effort of developing the next general permit for log transfer facilities, but the permit remains an EPA issued and enforced permit absent state primacy for the full NPDES program. In November of last year, DEC formed an advisory work group to examine the concerns, costs, and benefits of state primacy, specifically from the permittee perspective. The work group met in 6-day-long meetings between November and January of this year. Members from each major NPDES permittee group participated. That was the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, the Alaska Forest Association, the Alaska Miners Association, the Associated General Contractors of Alaska, the Pacific Seafood Processors Association, the Alaska Water and Wastewater Management Association, and the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. Public notice of the meeting schedule was provided and the meetings were open to the public. Work group proceedings, findings, and recommendations were captured in a report completed in January of this year, another report available from our website. In the end, support for state primacy for the program varied between permittee sectors. Certain sectors saw substantial benefit and strongly supported moving ahead. Others saw less benefit but would not object to the state pursuing primacy. All sectors agreed that certain elements should be incorporated into a state program, and House Bill 153 includes those elements recommended by the work group. Just a few words on the cost of primacy. There's a $1.5 million fiscal note with this bill. I offer this by way of explanation. The department's budget currently includes about $3.3 million and 30 staff that are devoted to activities that would contribute to an MPDS program. We're not starting from scratch. We have $3.3 million and 30 positions that would be moved into MPDS work. Those figures include the resources provided last year for the partial timber primacy effort. These positions currently are certifying the MPDS permits issued by EPA, and as required by the Clean Water Act, they're also issuing state permits for small discharges that EPA has not made a priority. Bridging the gap between the current resources, again, 30 positions and 3.0 million, and what is required now, 43 positions and 4.8 million, would require an additional 1.5 million and 13 new positions. Costs would be derived or divided between state general funds, federal grant funds, and permitting fee receipts. Permit fees would be based on charging for direct costs. That's a policy established by House Bill 361 back in 2000. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my remarks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Eason. Questions for these gentlemen? Representative Seaton?
I'm a little curious on the program costs. The 30 staff and the $3.3 million, is that all of those employees do now is NPDS, or do they do other activities as well?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, they do things like water quality standards. That's included in the NPDES effort. They do certification of the federal NPDES permit. So EPA issues the permit and the state certifies it. That oftentimes includes calculating mixing zone. And they actually issue state permits. So where EPA declines to issue a federal MPDES permit, then our staff would actually issue the permit. They also do inspections of some MPDES facilities and quite a number of state permitted facilities.
Follow up, please, Representative.
Thank you. Well, I guess what I'm trying to find out is the 30 staff and the $3.3 million, if that includes things that would be outside jobs that they're doing currently that are outside of the NPDES, and the 4.8 million and 43 employees is just NPDES. Are those other jobs going to still need to be done? And does that mean then that we don't really just have the difference between those numbers, that number, that 3.3 million is actually smaller because there's some of those 30 positions that work is still going to have to be done by your division outside of NPDES.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, the work that's being done by those 30 positions will be become part and parcel of the NPDES program. They won't really change what they're doing. It will just be subsumed into the and become a portion of the NPDES program. I'm not trying to dance around your question, but I'm not sure. I either don't understand it or I'm not doing a good job of answering.
You go to Chairman Samuels, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the fiscal note, you're adding 13 positions, and some of the work will be just distributed amongst all of those people. Okay. Thank you.
Gentlemen. I had some questions, and I had a very difficult time communicating with your department last week. I just had some access problems. But I wanted to know from you, please, how much public input have you received on HB 153?
What was the question? Can I hear?
I'm sorry. How much public input have you received on HB 153? When you had your public meetings in various communities, did you receive very much public input, and what was the gist of that?
Mr. Chairman, if I might, as Dan pointed out, this is the culmination, or we are here today after a series of events and at least two legislative sessions. There's been quite a bit of input in development of the original NPDES assumption study that was requested by the legislature. There's quite a bit of public input through the legislative process on it during those last 2 years, and then there was quite a bit of involvement, as Dan mentioned, in the six meetings that were held here last fall. In terms of the act on this bill, I mean, this is the first committee of referral, so the public testimony here will be the first testimony on this actual HB 153.
I didn't have the benefit of being here for the last two legislative sessions, so when you say that SB 326 is the culmination of a great deal of public input, can you outline that for me a little bit, please?
Mr. Chairman, I didn't mean to say that Senate Bill 326. What I meant to say was that this process started with Senate Bill 326, and what that bill said was it tasked the department with creating basically a report that looked at the costs and benefits of the state assuming primacy. So the process didn't culminate with Senate Bill 326. It really sort of started with Senate Bill 326.
Have you gone out and solicited public opinion in communities that are going to be affected by NPDES? And what was the feedback that you received? How many communities did you visit? You know, can you give me that from the department's perspective, please?
Mr. Chairman, we've not held any public hearings on that. We had the work group. It had six meetings. Those were open to the public. The work group was comprised of permittees. We were looking for the perspectives specifically, not of the public necessarily, but of the permittees, those that would be regulated by the program. Those meetings were open to the public. There was public notice given of the schedule. But we've not held public hearings or meetings across the state on this concept.
Well, Mr. Chair, I might add, in terms of communities, most communities are required to have NPDES permits as part of their wastewater discharge. Their sewage treatment plants, their sewage discharges require NPDES permits. We had both large and small representatives on the municipalities, and from SB 326 in the preparation of that report, there's been a wide distribution of information. And information has been available, and I would encourage anybody, if they have a question as to the extent to which we've made documents available, it's all on our webpage and has been since we engaged in this process. It's been the topic of a number of previous legislative sessions. It's last year, it's this year, and it's been on our webpages in terms of all the reports and information that's been generated as a result of those reviews.
In your opinion, will the EPA sign off on this?
Mr. Chairman, this is an application process. With this bill, it will give us the legislative endorsement to move forward in preparation of the rules that will apply and the actual design of the program for EPA approval. As we've testified, there are only four other states besides of Alaska that have not received primacy. We would assume, and all indications to date are, that we can design a program that, in fact, EPA will approve.
How long will that process take?
Mr. Chairman, the bill calls for an application into EPA by June of 2006, and we anticipate it would take EPA a year from then to actually approve the application. So we look for approval June 2007.
Okay. Since we are saving the Fed's money, will we receive any support funding from them to help with the $1.5 million out of the general fund?
Mr. Chairman, no. We receive currently as much federal grant money as we would if we had, if they had approved primacy for this.
What are the financial advantages for Alaskans? I appreciate the argument for states' rights. What are the specific financial advantages for businesses and other participants in seeing it come over to the state's purview?
Mr. Chairman, the financial advantages vary. Certainly, the larger, more complex, and more time-consuming permits, the more potential savings and financial advantage there are. We did, as one of the exercises the working group did, was to take a mine basically the size of the Pogo mine, make some assumptions about production rate and price per goal, and a very interesting exercise. It clearly demonstrated that if you can shave 6 months off of a two-year permitting process, not by reducing public notice, not by reducing public comment, but basically by having a single agency instead of two agencies do the permitting, that the advantage to that theoretical mining company would be on the order of millions of dollars over the course of the mine life. That's probably on the high end, you know, and it's a range on down to probably financial advantage would be, you know, insignificant in the case of some permits.
Thank you very much. Representative Crawford?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In my short time here, it seems to me that the trend has been to have less and less state employees, and wherever possible, we've let the federal government bear the expense of permits and that sort of thing. I'm generally in favor of bringing it on home and having our own employees take a good look at this. But as I read through this bill, I keep seeing for timber-related activities deleted. What's the reason why we would single that out and delete that from the bill in a number of places throughout the bill?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Crawford, when House Bill 546 passed last year, that gave us primacy just for the timber sector, that's when that phrase is, it appears, because House Bill 546 amended our statutes to say that DEC should get primacy for the timber sector. So this bill, you'll see in several locations, it takes out that reference to the timber sector. So it just says DEC shall get primacy, eliminates for the timber sector.
It's all coming clear now.
Representative Ledoux?
I've got a couple of questions. First of all, you mentioned that you would expect, assuming that you get approval, to get approval in 2007. Is that correct? But I see a fiscal note for 2006 of almost $900,000. So what's that for?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ledoux. It's basically to prepare the application, and to prepare the application means writing all of the regulations. It's a very extensive regulation exercise. That's the beginning of it. It also means preparing our data systems to receive primacy and a number of other things, but it's that sort of kind of half a year's worth of funding is basically to do the work to present an application to EPA.
Follow up, please.
Well, it's actually another totem question. I'm just wondering whether any of the boroughs or other municipalities have weighed in on this one way or another.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ledoux, they have. We'll encourage them to let you know how they feel, particularly if they support this.
Could you let us?
Yes, Representative Ledoux.
If you have information suggesting that they fail and if they don't support it, could you also provide us with that information?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ledoux, we will.
Any more questions for these two gentlemen? Representative Seat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I understand that you have instituted the lead in permitting on timber permits, not sole primacy, but the lead. What difference has that made in any applications and any things gone forward for the timber industry?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, that process has just barely started. It's not made any difference yet. It's put DEC in the lead for developing the next permit. That permit, it's a large general permit. It's actually two general permits. It will be a year before we sort of have a draft permit in place. So the short answer to your question is, at this point, it's not made any difference. It will make a difference. I believe it will make a significant difference, not the least of which is that if you're a log transfer facility today, you have to get three separate permits. You have to get one to deposit bark in the water. You have to get one if you've got a sewage discharge, and you've got to get one for stormwater. All three of those can come from EPA or some combination of EPA and DEC. As lead, what we'll do is bundle those three permits together into what we call an integrated permit. We're working on that now, so that a company that operates a log transfer facility can apply, you know, once, a single application, and receive all three permits in an integrated form. It'll save time and duplication and inefficiency.
Representative Ledoux.
Do you know how many staff members EPA now has working on Alaska permits?
Representative Ledoux, I have Bob Robichaud on the line with EPA. Do you want to direct that question to him?
Sure.
Bob, are you with us?
Good afternoon. This is Bob Robichaud. What was the question again?
I'm going to have Representative Ledoux repeat the question.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Robichaud, I'd like to know how many EPA staffers you have working with respect to Alaska permits.
The figure's around 20 individuals. It's not just writing permits. We have folks that, of course, do inspections and enforcement and compliance work. We have attorneys that we charge to our account, essentially. We also have laboratory individuals that we charge to our account. So we don't have 20 permit writers per se, but we've got 20 staff members that I would say are assigned to some facet of our NPDES program.
Bob, while I have you on the phone, and then Representative Ledoux has a follow-up, what kind of a budget do you allocate to permit writing in Alaska?
Well, that's a difficult one. Our budget seems to go down every year. On the average, we're looking at about, I did this a couple of years ago, Mr. Chairman, and I think it was about $1.4 million that I calculated. That's not considering overhead costs. It's just direct costs.
Okay. Representative Ledoux?
Well, then I guess if EPA is spending $1.4 million, and EPA has about 20 staffers, and Alaska is planning on doing it with 13 additional staffers. I guess what I'm a little bit concerned about is instead of streamlining this process, we may end up with delays if the amount of staff isn't adequate.
Comment, gentlemen?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ledoux, if you total the staff at DEC working on what will become MPDS things and the staff at EPA, come up with a total of 51 staff, combined DEC and EPA. What we're proposing is a staffing level of 43, which is less than the current total, but we're confident that we can run the program with a staffing level of 43. That 8-person reduction is what happens when you go from having two agencies doing the same thing to one agency doing one thing. It's just, we'll pick up those 8 positions in efficiency. We'll do as good or better job than EPA does.
Gentlemen, let me ask you a question to follow up on Representative Ledoux's. We're enjoying a surplus this year. What happens if in the out years, you know, the state budget thins and we look to cut positions and DEC is cut? Don't we run the risk of hurting the permitting process in the out years?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'd like to just look at the recent past in terms of the last 2 years. We've actually reduced our agency budget, but we've focused on building our core programs. We've actually, with the legislative support, reduced the budget and put up a high priority on our core permit programs, and we've actually built the staff and the resources directed to that. Who knows what the future will bring? I guess that's always a question. We heard that on the Senate side. But we do feel that this is where that debate should occur, where the state's priorities are and how important the permit program is relative to other state programs. This is the right forum right here, and we just have a lot of faith that this is the proper forum right here in Alaska with this legislative body overseeing the department's budget and authorities.
If in the future, I mean, we have an administration right now that's friendly toward resource development. If in the future, if we cede this power to the state away from the feds, and then we end up with an administration that's less friendly to mineral resource development, don't we run the risk of actually necking down the process by having a state of Alaska only gatekeeper?
Mr. Chairman, you do. There's no question about that. The risk is that the program's reduced to a point that EPA will no longer approve it, accept it, and it goes back.
If I might just add, just to complement that comment, I think there is another element here besides the executive branch, and that's the public itself. I would imagine the worst fear would be if the public becomes complacent and the dynamics change, but we're fairly confident that the public's going to keep a watchful eye on this.
If I might, just one more thing.
Sure.
EPA has never, no state has ever relinquished primacy to EPA. Is that correct? It's never happened. It's not to say that it couldn't, but it never has. Typically, once states have it, they're very reluctant to let it go.
Sure, I understand that. Representative Seed?
Yeah, I guess just following up on Commissioner's last comment there, I'm concerned because of the public comment section where the public becomes complacent or not, because the public hasn't been complacent on water quality regs. I mean, you proposed to allow pollution mixing zones in spawning streams, and the public has been universally opposed to that, and yet have not withdrawn those proposed regulation changes, and as you know, the Finance Subcommittee finally came down and said, you know, we disagree with the way you're going, whether you call this streamlining or whatever, in ignoring the public comments or ignoring all the comments from the legislature. And so we have a situation in which that I'm concerned exactly what you're saying is that the public needs to be aware, but when the public is aware and is commenting, it seems to be ignored by the agency. And so I'm concerned about giving primacy in this particular area, because this is exactly the area which numerous legislators have weighed in on this, and it seems to have been ignored. So maybe you can comment on that.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, my comment was just we both, the executive branch and the legislative branch, operate through a very public process. We take public input, we consider that public input, and then we take actions. As you pointed out to me in a House Finance Committee meeting, you expressed through that body your concern with actions that we're still in the process of in terms of working on some regulations. So I don't think it's a question of whether public comment is ignored. I don't think we've ignored, and I think the record ultimately will demonstrate that we haven't ignored public comment. It's how we apply it to a specific action and interact with the legislative branch on those very decisions as well.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Any other questions for these two gentlemen? Thank you very much for your testimony, man. If we could go to Dick Coos. In Ketchikan.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, Dick.
Yeah, go ahead.
Can you hear me? Hello? Hello?
Yes, Dick?
Yes, are you there?
Yes, please go ahead.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dick Pusa in Ketchikan, Alaska, and I represent CARE, or Concerned Alaskans for Resources and Environment. And CARE is a nonprofit group established to promote access to our resources by our local businesses and Alaska businesses. I also served two terms on the Ketchikan Gateway Borough Assembly, and I'm a retired federal forester. And, Mr. Chairman, I urge the committee to support HB 153. We support the state of Alaska taking over the NPDES program from the federal EPA. This is only one of the several programs under which the federal government continues to treat the state of Alaska like a territory. And the state needs to control its own future and not the federal government. Now, I assume that you will review the NPDES Primacy Work Group report that's dated February 24th. So I'm not going to repeat any of that information because it also supports straight state primacy like was discussed. But I do want to make a couple of points. One being local, that being state knowledge and experience of and with the resource management, development, and protection is better than that of EPA or someone who sets a FAR. Second point, DEC, in my opinion, uses better science and works better with the people in the permitting process than EPA. EPA appears to be here to say no or simply delay, and the business or the activity ends up going away. DEC usually asks, how can we do this and still meet the law? And like the gentleman said, the law is not going to be overlooked. And I'd like to give you a Ketchikan example of EPA science and local knowledge. Currently, several Ketchikan fish processors have EPA permits to discharge fish waste. The problem is that under EPA requirements, the fish waste simply pile up on the bottom and does not decompose in a timely manner, and in a warm summer weather, it burps a nice, healthy smell. These EPA requirements were established in the mid-80s, and they require grinding of the fish waste up sort of like flour and limits the bottom deposit to 1 acre. Before this grinding was required, this was less of a problem because the fish waste was only chopped up, and then the little critters on the bottom and other fish ate most of it. And at a meeting with EPA 3 or 4 years ago here in Ketchikan, they readily admitted that they had no science or anything to support the fine grinding or the 1 acre limitation. And also this 1 acre limitation has been applied to our log transfer sites. So I have to wonder where the science is and why we're even regulating some things, but local people know better. Well, the last point relates to funding. Our resources of Alaska are a wealth of Alaska, and our resources must be wisely managed, developed, and protected in order to provide for our long-term financial health and the health of those resources. DEC, DNR, and ADF&G are the state agencies who are the key to this management, development, and protection. The state funding of these three key departments is a pittance compared to the total state budget, yet they are key to our financial health and, once again, the health of the resources. And you're going to need to fund DEC to manage the NPDES program, but it will benefit the state manyfold. And considering the importance of these three departments to our future, all should have adequate funding to accomplish the specific missions required. And thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Coos. Are there any questions, Mr. Coos? Thank you very much, sir. If we can go back to this room, David Stone, are you with us?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, forgive me, I'm coming down with a bad cold. But my name is David Stone. I am Vice President of the Alaska Miners Association, and I'm testifying on their behalf. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on House Bill 153 that would give the Department of Environmental Conservation authority to assume primacy for the NPDES program. I didn't see in your packet our letter, but I see that it looks like one was distributed around, so I won't read it. This issue has been discussed by the mining industry for a very long time. However, it was not until we participated in a series of DEC work group meetings to evaluate state assumption that we became convinced that state primacy was in the best interest for Alaska. We will get you in a letter that should be attached. It's actually an article by Attorney Larry Hartig, who is very, very knowledgeable about NGPS, NPDS permits that he wrote for the Alaska Miner, our monthly publication. Larry has worked on water permit issues for various clients, including the Red Dog and Pogo mines. In that article, Hartig discusses various reasons why it would be better if the state took primacy from EPA. One other problem, though, that Larry did not mention deals with how other non-Alaska factors can impact Alaska permits. Specifically, EPA sometimes makes its decisions on Alaska's permits based on whether their decision could affect other parts of Region 10. There are also situations where EPA looks at our permits in light of court cases that may be pending or other issues in other parts of the country. Local Alaska conditions and needs and the merits of a particular permit are not the primary consideration, but rather how the decision on an Alaska permit may affect some other part of the country. This approach by EPA adds at least two further problems. First, passing the permit back to Washington, D.C. for this review will likely add several months of delay for a permittee. Second, the EPA decision may require inclusion of conditions that do not fit Alaska and add costs and problems for the permittee. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to comment. We encourage you to move this bill as soon as possible. DEC has a huge job to make application to EPA and to obtain primacy, and they really do need to get started now. We're talking about almost essentially 2 years. We understand that permit fees will go up. We understand that they're asking for general monies, general funds, but we have come to the conclusion that we think it's in the best interest of the state.
Thank you, David. Are there any questions for Mr. Stone? Thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate it. And we also have Rich, is that right, Rick Hague? I'm sorry. To state your name for the record, please, sir.
Yes. Members of the committee, Chairman, thank you for this opportunity to speak on this bill. My name is Rich High. I'm past president of the Council of Alaska Producers. I'm also general manager of Greens Creek Mining Company. The Council of Alaska Producers supports House Bill 153. The council was part of the task force reviewing the assumption of NPDES program with DEC. They were part of that with the Alaska Miners Association. We support the comments presented by Acting Commissioner Fredrickson on House Bill 153. We believe that Alaska can manage Alaska's waters more efficiently, more timely in the permitting process. We also believe that DEC is more familiar with the needs of Alaskans, both the regulatory regulated community as well as the public community in managing the Alaska water programs. This can be done in an environmentally responsible manner. We believe Alaska can join the other 45 states that believe that it is better for the state to manage their own water permitting programs. The mining industry is only a small part of this, as the municipalities, the oil and gas, and others are also a big part of reviewing the assumption of the NPDES program. The Producers Council urges your passage of this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have questions for Rich? Yeah, Representative Seaton.
I guess I have one. Were there any public members on the work group other than permittees?
I don't believe there were, but I would defer to Representative Seaton through the chair.
Dan, there were no public members on the task force.
Other than permittees. Other than permittees.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, there were no public members on the group. They were all permittees, although the group did include the Alaska Water and Wastewater. I mean, it wasn't purely industry either. The meetings were open to the public and attended by members of the public.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Samuels?
Thank you. Actually, I had a question either for the department or for Mr. Stone. The Region 10 for EPA, you alluded that it's rather broad. Do you know which states it includes for that federal region for EPA?
Region 10?
Yeah.
It's Oregon, Washington, Idaho.
Thank you.
Of those other three states, are any of them, do any of those three states enjoy the same primacy that the state of Alaska is pursuing?
Washington and Oregon have primacy. The states that don't have primacy are Idaho, New Mexico, Massachusetts, and New Hampshire.
Representative Elkins?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't the Onesta, she was the director of Region 10 at one time, wasn't she? And she was on board when you started this process?
Representative Elkins, Commissioner Onesta Ballard was a previous Region 10 EPA administrator and was the commissioner of DEC when we submitted the report to the legislature.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Knight.
Thank you.
If we can go back to the telephone, we have Earl Hubbard from Trident, please.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Earl Hubbard. I am one of the vice presidents of Trident Seafoods Corporation. My area of responsibility covers regulatory affairs, which is why I have taken particular interest in this subject, and wish to thank you for the opportunity to share our comments. Trident, our company, is involved in essentially all aspects of the Alaskan fishing industry. That is, we catch, we process, we market all commercial seafood products from Alaska. We are the largest, we are the most diversified seafood company operating in the state and have been for many years. I am happy to offer our support through these specific comments in support of Alaska state primacy for the MPDS program. Essentially, all sustainable Alaskan sport, commercial, and subsistence fisheries depend on high environmental quality. Of course, specifically high water quality. Our commercial seafood sales actually rely on the image of high environmental quality. By that, I mean you can imagine a person at the market in Alaska or out of Alaska shopping for dinner considering seafood from Alaska. You can also imagine that if while making a selection that person thought of pollution of some kind, then that sale is over. In fact, a lot more than that particular sale is over when you consider the implication and the importance of commercial fisheries to the state's economy. So any environmental threat, actual or perceptual, concerns us. We have a very large vested interest in the state. Primarily, Alaska is where we operate from. Our company owns several seafood ventures in other states, but Alaska is where we do most of our business. What our company can reasonably, feasibly, and economically do to help protect Alaska's environmental image, its actual environmental quality, is in our best interest. There is no question. With respect to cultural and diversified economic importance, I think water quality ranks among Alaskans' most valuable assets, and it makes sense that the state would want to assume the lead role in protective programs. Not separate from EPA as much as in balance with EPA, which is, by the way, an agency that's not going anywhere, and I'm personally glad of that. I think there's a dual purpose and a dual importance to both federal and state cognizance for programs that seek to protect that which we're contemplating today. So for me, primacy is not a question, or is rather a question of leadership, not instead of partnership with EPA. Primacy does offer Alaska greater control, no question about that, and with control comes responsibility over the MPDS program. It's really just that simple. It presumes correctly that state assets are best protected by the state's own stewardship, and I think you recognize that. You might be asking yourselves, well, now how is that exactly? My thoughts are, my expertise is that primacy transfers authority, and our experience is that with authority comes accountability to the state for interpretation and implementation of the Federal Clean Water Act, as well as the state's own water quality standards. It's an integral opportunity and a coordinating role which lends due deference to the state. Due deference is, of course, as you know, a value in itself when considering permit applications or oversight of programs that administer a cognizance for how well these permits and protective programs are doing, actual measurement of value for their implementation. And so with authority and accountability combined in one agency, that is DEC, you get a regulatory efficiency. And with efficiency, you get an economy, which is a combination we're always looking for in private business. How can we most economically be efficient and complete in our oversight or responsible roles? And DEC is poised to have just that opportunity through this primacy bill. Ultimately, I think state administration of the MPDS program improves defensible evaluation of new discharge applications and oversight of existing discharge permits. State administration will also provide, I'm convinced, the timeliness for process that we don't now have. And again, I think it reflects another's comments earlier that DEC, taking the lead position, also takes the lead in coordinating and placing focus on the diversity of experience and expertise they have to be efficient with this program. And nothing against EPA. We have a good relationship with EPA, but they will tell you that they're spread pretty thin. The cost of being spread thin is that they don't have as much staff hour opportunity as those of us who are applying for permits or who have them or to reissue expired permits would like. And in the balance are a number of months that go by, and that's not in our best interest. In terms of timing, on a different note, I think DEC is currently more able than ever, certainly in my view, to develop and administer this program in a professional and effective way that gives the next administration something good to work with. Acting Commissioner Kirk Fredrickson and certainly his director, Dan Easton, are both really very, very good. I think you've gathered that already. In what they do and how they do it. They are, in my experience, and I know them both a little bit, responsive and make excellent leadership, a leadership team for their staff. And I know this, or I wouldn't say it. In closing, I think primacy is an opportunity, a valuable opportunity for Alaska to take the cooperative lead in tandem with EPA. As well, I think that primacy is good for water quality in Alaska, and I'm certain that it's good for our business interests. I thank you kindly for considering our thoughts. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Any questions for Mr. Hubbard? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony, sir.
Yes, you're welcome.
Can we go next to Lois Epstein in Anchorage, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope you can hear me.
We can. Go ahead, please.
And thank you, members of the committee. Good afternoon. My name is Lois Epstein, and I am an Alaska licensed engineer with Cook Inlet Keeper in Anchorage. Cook Inlet Keeper is a nonprofit membership organization dedicated to protecting the Cook Inlet watershed and the life it sustains. I have worked on safety and environmental issues for over 20 years for two private consultants, the US EPA, Environmental Defense in Washington, D.C., and Cook Inlet Keeper. Additionally, I've served on several multi-stakeholder federal advisory committees and currently serve on an advisory committee appointed by US DOT Secretary Mineta that includes former Alaska House and Senate member Drew Pierce. HB 153 accurately reflects a wish list from the industry members of the Department of Environmental Conservation's work group studying NPDES primacy. Because tribes and public interest organizations were excluded from the work group, our concerns were never seriously addressed and their solutions were not included in HB 153. Additionally, though DEC did not tell your committee, the workgroup member representing the Association of Municipal Wastewater Treatment Plants opposes the state's bid for MPDES primacy. And just to be clear, there has been no public input into HB 153 to date. With this background and bearing in mind that EPA might have similar concerns and may not approve the state's application for primacy unless the legislature amends the bill and the state amends the fiscal note, Cook Inlet-Keeper offers the following substantive issues requiring amendments and further information gathering on the part of the legislature. Our primary concerns are, one, the high governmental cost of the permitting program, which only will grow as the state's industrial growth increases. Two, ensuring a high-quality permitting program to protect Alaska salmon and other fish. Three, ensuring governmental accountability to tribes and the public. According to HB 153's fiscal note, the legislature will need to appropriate at a minimum $1.5 million each year to support the bigger state government required to manage this complex program. Because workgroup members insisted on a limit to permit fees of slightly more than 16% of program costs, compared to the 57% of the program costs paid by permittees in Oregon and the 75 to 80% paid in Washington State, the increased cost will come from other state initiatives such as education or road maintenance, and so will be coming from general funds. Should industrial growth occur in Alaska, the legislature will need to increase the annual appropriation beyond $1.5 million to cover the approximately 85% of the program not funded by permit fees. If the growth occurs among businesses with less than 20 employees, annual appropriation needs will be even higher given cost recovery constraints for the program. If the legislature fails to fund the program adequately in the future, it is likely that permit issuance would be slowed, as Representative Ledoux mentioned, and permit errors may occur. Since there is virtually no chance that EPA will take back the permitting program once it has been given to the state, permittees will suffer due to insufficient general fund resources. The workgroup's report states that permit fees, quote, are expected to increase by a factor of 1.8, a substantial increase, unquote, including increases to municipal permit fees. Thus, both state and local costs will increase significantly should the state obtain NPDES primacy. The fiscal note cost estimates arguably are low because proposed DEC staffing levels are insufficient to implement the program adequately. If the program is not carried out with sufficient technical enforcement staff, water quality and fish habitat will decline. Currently, a total of 51 full-time equivalent employees from EPA and DEC carry out the permitting program. DEC estimates reduce this number to 43 full-time employees, an overall reduction of 16%. That includes a 28% reduction in permitting staff and a 16% reduction in compliance and enforcement staff. And as an engineer, it's very clear to me that a technical analysis is a technical analysis, and there are very few ways you can streamline that. Similarly, that's true for enforcement as well. So those reductions really concern me. Though DEC may state that its proposed staff numbers are in line with that of other states, its own information shows that to be untrue. For example, the state of Alaska expects to spend only 52% of the resources that Washington State spends per permit, and that's from the document that was published in 2004, overseen by Commissioner Ballard. Since DEC has produced essentially no evidence to date on how it can maintain an adequate permitting program with severe staff reductions, we request that the legislature obtain additional detailed information from DEC on the adequacy of its staffing estimates, especially for technical and enforcement staff, and the likelihood of EPA approving the permitting program with serious staff reductions in a state with numerous large industrial operations. Additionally, Cook Inlet-Keeper and industry members of the work group share a concern about the limited technical expertise at DEC and the likely use of consultants to develop permits. Problems with the use of consultants include potential conflicts of interest and the lack of long-term DEC staff experience with particular industries, which can result in technical deficiencies and costly staff inefficiencies. Though conflicts of interest were discussed in the work group, and I was the person who raised that in my peanut gallery position in the background to the discussions, Section 4H4 needs to be amended to specifically prevent conflicts of interest for DEC consultants. NPDES primacy will eliminate federal government-to-government consultations with tribes and various analyses that the public currently participates in, which are required by federal statutes to ensure a healthy environment. Tribal government-to-government consultations have numerous benefits, which can be better described by tribal members than by me, and I urge the legislature to include tribes in its primacy deliberations. Sections 4H2 and 4H3 of HB 153 enable industry permittees to review draft and final permits before public issuance, giving industry permittees excessive and unfair influence over permits. EPA may disallow such unbalanced treatment. The legislature needs to remove these sections from the bill. Finally, legislators need to amend Section 1B2 so DEC's NPDES work group is representative of all stakeholders. This section currently extends the mandate of the undemocratic and unrepresentative work group which crafted this bill's content. Thank you very much for your attention to these concerns. NPDES primacy is a major undertaking for DEC with serious fiscal, fish, and governmental accountability implications. Cook and LaKeeper urges the legislature not to make costly programmatic changes that are of questionable value to permittees and troubling for tribes and the public. This is a case where an important engineering saying applies. If it works, don't fix it. Thank you again, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Lois, I appreciate that. Is this is your testimony written?
It is, and I have submitted it here at the LIO for your reading.
Terrific. Are there questions for Lois? Representative Seaton?
Yeah, I just had one question. Did you request to become a member of the work group or to expand the work group to other public members?
Yes, I did, Representative Seaton. At the second meeting, that was the first one I was actually notified about, I attended and said that it would be valuable to expand this work group to include stakeholders in this issue that were not a part of it. And we had a discussion on that, and the argument was made that already too much work had been done, and it didn't make sense to expand the work group at that point. And besides, we were in the room, we could listen. But what was truly frustrating is that we could bring up issues, but they were then not discussed in sufficient detail because they weren't considered relevant to the work group. And so it was truly unrepresentative.
Thank you, Lois. Lois, we appreciate your testimony, and we will review that. Thank you very much. I'd like to indulge the committee for just a couple of minutes and go to Owen Graham, who's with the Alaska Forest Association. He's been waiting online. Is he still with us?
Yeah, I'm still here. Can you hear me all right?
We can. Please go ahead, Mr. Graham. We're bumping right up into the end of our committee hearing, so if you can make your comments as brief as possible, we would sure appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Well, I'm Owen Graham. I represent the Alaska Forest Association. But most of the things that reasons I support have already been mentioned to you, and I've submitted written testimony, so I won't repeat it all. I was on the working group that was a member of that working group that was just discussed a while ago, and I know there were people from the communities that wanted to have a bigger role in the working group, but that. I thought the DEC did a good job of letting them speak up whenever they wanted and listening and discussing the issues they brought forward. So I don't think there should be a concern about the makeup of that working group. The purpose of the group, as I understood it, was simply to find out what the permittees needed in terms of an improved, streamlined permitting system. And the DEC's job, I think, is to protect the environment, and they're certainly doing a good job of that. So we support primacy and I'll cut it off there so I don't run you out of time.
All right. Any questions for Mr. Graham? Representative Seaton?
Yeah, I had one. Thank you for your written testimony here. I had one question on your Section 2. You are supporting this because it replaces formal consultations with a faster, less formal process. What do you see as that faster, less formal process?
That my understanding of that the process would be less cumbersome came from what the working group discussions. I'm not the expert on that. It'd probably be better to ask Dan Easton that question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Mr. Easton, would you like to answer that question for us? Well, if you come forward, it'd be easier for us to pick it up on the microphone, please.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, When EPA is the permitting authority, there are very formal consultation processes that apply to it as a federal agency with other federal agencies. With primacy, those formal consultation processes, these are with the National Marine Fisheries Service and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, don't apply to the state. What applies instead is it's a condition of EPA approval, typically, that the state will consult with, but the process is less formal. It's shorter. It's less prescribed in terms of what conflict resolution. It's just a less prescriptive, shorter state consultation process as opposed to a federal agency to federal agency process.
Adequate. Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Eason. We will continue public testimony on HB 153 on Wednesday, beginning at 1 p.m. Are there any committee comments before we adjourn today? Seeing none, we're adjourned at 3:05.